70, tape 1.
Yes?
Yeah.
Going west, that's how I was born in North Orange.
Pretty close to Franklin County.
Well, we are in right in Franklin, just across the line.
Uh-huh.
In St. Lawrence County, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
What was your father's name?
Well, my father was Charles Trussell, who was from out near Stockholm. You probably don't know what that is. That's on the outside of Potsdam, coming this way.
Uh-huh.
And my father's people owned a farm, which was right on the Winthrop Road, New York. And then he married my mother in North Orange. And then when I was a little girl, my mother died. And her father and mother, who were the older people hanging up on the wall there, the Newcombs, they brought me up. I lived with them. They had lost their little girl just a little while before that. And so I was brought up with my mother's family.
Your mother's grandparents?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And my father had died, and my mother died when I was perhaps 7 or 8 years old.
Your father was how did he spell his last name?
Trussell. Trussell.
Uh-huh. Was he of German ancestry?
No, he was a man, but it was a foreign farm where his father had on the Winthrop to Potsdam Road. And, that's where he, and all the Trussell family lived there. And he married my mother. He was traveling then. That was back in the days when they had the carts, you know, you've heard of that, going around through the country, selling dry goods and all that.
Right.
And I don't know what year that was, but it was in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came to Malone when I was about 18. And I had a lot of friends here, and it was a Mr. Proctor, John Proctor, who was a Rutland Railroad station agent here in Malone. And my brother, the only son of this couple, later was the agent here at the railroad. That is, he was a telegraph operator and the agent. Of course, we had trains then.
Mm-hmm. What age were you when your father passed away?
Oh. I can't remember. I was married, I think, in 1905. And was around somewhere in that area, or time.
How old were you when you went to live with your grandparents, your mother's parents?
Oh, I would say I probably was 8 years old, after my mother died, and my father had been in Canada, and he had a business over there. And after my mother died, they were living out here in the town of Winthrop in North Orange. And he went back to Canada then again.
Your grandfather?
No, my father.
Oh, your father.
No, my father. My grandfather, Edwin Newcomb, was a carpenter in North Orange, and he had been brought up in Waitsfield, Vermont, and made very, very fine furniture, and anything he did in woodwork was very, very beautifully done. And then, as I was growing up, that began the era when they had undertakers. And he was the first undertaker out in St. Lawrence County for many years. And then, of course, they didn't do embalming then. And when that came in vogue, why, he didn't want to take it up.
Mm-hmm.
So he sold his business. I wouldn't remember what year that was, but I was a young girl at that time.
You were born in 1876.
Guess that's right.
Yeah. So when you were 8 years old, it was 1884, and that's the year you went to live with your grandparents, about.
Well, about that time.
Yeah.
Where'd you get my age, hon?
Well, you said you were 94.
Yes, that's right. That makes it two now. I was trying, because I forget every little while just what year it was.
Mm-hmm.
But you got it right.
How many brothers and sisters did you have?
I never had any. I was the only child my mother had.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm the Newcomb family. You see, my grandfather was my, what I called my brother, the one who was with the Rutland Railroad for 50 years. And he was the father of, he married twice. He married my own grandmother when he was younger. And then she died after my mother was born.
Uh-huh.
So it was a mixed up family.
So your your grandmother Newcomb that you lived with was really your step-grandmother.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right.
How many rooms did the Newcombs have in their house?
Oh, it was a cottage house. I can't remember. We had, I think, 3 bedrooms and a good-sized living room downstairs, dining room and kitchen. No bathroom at that time. No one in town had a bathroom then.
What's a cottage house is distinguished from another type of house?
Smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And usually had, I know, there was this, we were on the main, there was the main street, and the railroad, the Rutland Railroad, used to run directly back of our house off maybe not a quarter of a mile.
Mm-hmm.
And that was there until after I was married. And of course, as you know, they've taken up the tracks.
Right.
Which is a very crazy thing. Supposing something happens, what are they going to do? They'll need a railroad. We should get involved in another war. What would they do?
You probably had to keep away from the railroad tracks when you were a young girl. They made you keep away from them.
Oh, well, yes. But we were, here was the main, the railroad track back here. Then there was the main street, came down here.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the first street, which would be probably maybe 2 blocks. The stores were all here. And it was about 2 blocks from my grandparents' house. And there was, as you came down the hill, there was a lovely river. And that was just beyond our house. And that was where my grandfather had his, he had a big block that he owned where he did all his lumber work. And his undertaking office was there too.
Mm-hmm. What kind of furniture did your grandparents have in their living room?
Well, of course, it would be antique today, but it wasn't, I don't mean typically so, that is, it wasn't antique for their day.
No.
I remember in our house, you didn't begin to have Davenports then, as we know them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd have a, in our living room, there was a, it's what we always called it, a couch.
Yeah.
Good place to lie down, you know. And then our dining room table, my grandfather had made years before when he made anything, furniture, it was done beautifully. So in his spare time, that would be when he was first married. I think he told me that he was 18 years old when he and a friend of his, the same age, came from Waitsfield, Vermont. And they came across Lake Champlain on the ice.
Uh-huh.
And they drove a pair of oxen. Now, what year that was, I can't tell you.
Well, how old was your grandfather when you went to live with him?
Well, he was about 75. He was far too old. Of course, she was his, this grandmother was his second wife. They were too old to take a child in today's time, you know, they wouldn't be allowed to take. You have to be a much younger couple than they were. But of course, with my mother dying and my father going back to Canada to go into the business when he married a Canadian the next time, and I never knew them at all because I lived there in North Lawrence. There's a little town. Oh, like perhaps Brushton is today. I think about that size.
Mm. Let's see, your grandfather would have been born about 1809.
Yes, by.
And he would have come across the river, Lake Champlain, about 1827, if he was 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Did he ever tell you anything about how life was in Vermont?
No, or he didn't. His people, his father was a farmer in Waitsfield, and this young man that they had a vision of, they were Parrishville, if you know where Parrishville is?
Yes.
Well, Parrishville was a great lumber center at that time, and that was the reason the boys came, because they were interested in the lumber work. And they went to Parrishville and settled there, and the Brownells, who were my grandmother's first grandmother's name, Brownell. And they were Parrishville people. And he lived there until then, when the railroad was built through here, he moved to North Lawrence. And he had his business there and lived and died there the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm. Did he tell you how that area was when he was young? Did he point out the differences to you when he
Well, I can remember some of them, not many though, because when he came, he was 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that was long before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
But he was brought up very strictly, I can remember that. All he had to do was to speak to my brother or I, and we did just what he said. There wasn't any argument as there is with children and parents today. I can remember that very plainly.
Did he tell you about his parents?
No. Outside of, I did remember his sister, Aunt Diantha, who was a maiden lady. She'd never married. And after my grandfather married the second time, before that, she came up here after my mother had died and took me to Waitsfield, to their country home.
In Waitsfield, Vermont?
Waitsfield, Vermont.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was there, I don't know whether probably 2 or 3 years with them, because my grandmother wasn't well, the second grandmother. You see, my grandfather married two cousins that were both Brownells. And so when I came there to live was after my first grandmother, of course, had died.
Mm-hmm.
And I was brought up with the idea. Both my grandmother and my mother had the old-fashioned consumption, or TB. And I can remember of hearing the neighbors say, because I guess I was a great talker and went on high most of the time.
What's went on high?
I mean, going like that, I was playing or working, whatever I did it very rapidly. And the neighbors used to say, well, she's a very lively child, but she'll go just like her mother and her grandmother. Well, of course, now that just goes to show that it isn't a good idea to talk before children, because I knew there was something that was wrong and what it was. And I said to my grandmother, where did my mother go? And she says, well, your mother was sick and died, but you're going to grow up and be a healthy girl, which I did, when you see, when I'm 94. But they all were going to have me have TB, because they did. Of course, they didn't know how to take care of it when my own grandmother, first grandmother, was living. Nowadays, if there's a person in the house that has TB, they're practically isolated, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're not, it wouldn't be allowed to take a little child up in your lap or fondle it as a mother would. And so I lay that to my good health and good common sense that this grandmother had, because she saw that I kept well, and if I had colds, I was taken care of. I didn't go running, racing out as the youngsters do today. Maybe they, I don't know, they... Probably, of course, they perhaps have a stronger constitution than I had. I'm not sure.
Were the women who were around in your girlhood, were they rather frail? Did they strike you as rather frail and reclusive?
Well, of course, my mother and my grandmother both were. But I don't remember about others. I remember the neighbors of my grandparents, but as far as I know, there was a Mr. Trussell lived in town that had the woman's store, that is, dry goods. It didn't carry dresses then.
Did they call it the woman's store?
No. No, it was called the Trussell store. And I know he had the produce, the things, sugar and flour and all those things, because sometimes I'd run, we were not two blocks from the store, I would run over for my grandmother to do errands. I mean, bring something that she wanted. That would be when I was older, perhaps 12 years old or so.
Mm-hmm. What was the house like in Vermont that you were taken to?
I don't remember that at all, except that it was a... when I was growing up, after I went down there with my aunt, of course I wouldn't remember then because I was too young to remember it, and she brought me home and stayed with my grandfather, who was her brother, for a while, and then went back and always lived in Vermont. But it was a typical farmhouse. And what I remember, of course, in this area, we do get a view of the mountains, but over there in Waitsfield, Faiston Mountain, which was a good-sized mountain.
It was called Faiston?
Well, that was the name of the town. I can't remember just what the... I can't remember what the name of it was, which is in Faiston, and that's Waitsfield town. And that mountain, I used to spend time at my grandmother's, sitting on the side porch, just there worshiping at that mountain. It was such a beautiful thing, because it came right out of, like it would on Constable Street here, you know. And I was fascinated by it. We didn't have any mountains here. And of course in North Lawrence you don't see the Adirondacks as we see them here.
Uh-huh.
So a mountain was quite a beauty spot to me.
What was your grandfather's living room furniture covered with? Was it covered with cloth or with horsehair or with something else?
Well, I don't remember that. It seems though there was some of it did have horsehair, but it was in that period. And that horsehair was used, I know, around town. And many of the things, as I say, he was a wonderful, there wasn't anything. I have a very beautiful work box upstairs, which is bird's eye maple and curly maple, which is beautiful wood that he made for my grandmother before my mother was born. And it has it's just about that square, and you put the cover up, and there's this first layer that sets in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there are places for your needles and for buttons and all sorts of things. But the curiosity of the thing was that on the front side of it, like the front side of here, Grandfather made here at the bottom a little place where there were nails that you put your spool thread on, you see?
Yes.
And then through that, he set in little pearl buttons, chiseling out the center where you would sew the button on, you see?
Yes.
And then the thread came through there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's quite a curiosity, and it's also, it's really, truly, and on top of it, he had cut out of ivory my grandmother's L.A.N. Ladaska A. Newcomb.
Your see? Grandmother was Ladaska.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. That was her name. Mm-hmm. And I remember the second grandmother I lived with, they did want my father to call me, and then they called her Dot, which was a funny name. But that was, of course, that was when I was really a baby.
And what was your grandfather Newcomb's first name?
Edwin yes. Charles Newcomb.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He was one of the Newcomb families, I said, that came from Waitsfield, Vermont.
In the living room of that house, was there a rug on the floor?
No, carpet. They had homemade rag carpets.
Mm-hmm.
That the mothers sewed the rags, and then they were either braided, and but they were no. It was what is known. Any antique would know was a old rag carpets, and they were woven or braided, whichever way, mm-hmm. like your grandmother may have a braided rug, you know. Takes three strands of material, and they're braided just like a girl has her hair braided.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Were they braided at home or at a factory?
Oh, no, they were. That was the occupation of the women, because at that time, they had to make all those things, you know. You didn't buy them in stores. And, no, they were made, and that was their side work, I guess you might call it. Mm-hmm. But, they did their own sewing, and they made their own clothes, I can remember that. And seems though there was nothing my grandmother didn't know how to do.
Could you describe how the rugs were braided? They were braided in three strands
yes.
together?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And how were they sewn together?
Well, like you'd sew two pieces, would take a strip of cloth, you know, maybe it would be an inch wide, and sometimes they were twisted, and then they were braided, one over the other, you know, in and out, like that. Mm-hmm. And then they were sewed, if you wanted to have, we'll just illustrate, if you wanted to have three shades of blue, do you see? Mm-hmm. And you'd had, now these were made out of the suits and the clothes of the men, you see, because it was stronger cloth.
I see, none of the women's clothing.
No. Okay. It might have been some of it, but they were in an age when everything had to be very durable, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which people don't think of today very much, I believe. But they were very pretty. And today, if anyone has a braided rug, it's really a real antique. I don't happen to have one now. I used to have, but I haven't now.
Did this rug go from wall to wall,
no,
or
no,
was it round?
No, no. It'd be like a small rug, like mm-hmm. you'd have here. I think that sometimes, that there are some of the places where they, if they had maybe a room no larger than this, it would be made in a carpet. And I remember the carpets were tacked down. Now, nowadays, if you have a rug, it lays down and it's heavy enough so it stays.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in those days, the carpet, we'll say, came to the wall, and that had to be tacked with tacks and down the side to make it stay there.
Mm-hmm.
And then if anything ever happened, it could be taken up and cleaned. I remember when the house cleaning time was with my grandmother's, and the rugs that we'd have, we'll say, in the dining room was larger, and also in the living room, and those were taken up. We had to take the tacks all out, they did. And then they went out on a clothesline in the wind, and the man of the house usually had a something, they hit it, you see,
uh-huh.
and the dust would come out.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way, they didn't have any way of cleaning them, as we know today. Now, if you get something on your rugs here, you can send it to cleaners and have it cleaned, but they didn't have that.
Did your grandparents' living room have rocking chairs?
Yes, oh yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then their dining room chairs were straight chairs. Now, this is an old antique chair. This is up there. See, this cover comes up?
Yes.
Now that, I can't remember, that wasn't in my family, but in some part of it. And this was given to me.
The seat on this chair lifts right up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What were the dining room chairs like in your...
Well, good deal of shape of this, as I recall.
A slightly curved back.
Yes, mm-hmm. And some of them had little... My grandfather was an expert carpenter. I remember her having spindles, you know.
Uh-huh.
Come down this way, and they'd be little holes up in here that the spindles, instead of this piece, they were much more durable mm-hmm. than...
There were holes in the top section of the chair yes. for the spindles to fit in.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. right. And then they came down in here.
From I've the got, top right down to the seat.
Yes, I think I've got to... And what the cottager, that's what... One of the plain chairs, it had an entirely wooden seat. Maybe curved in to fit your body a little bit, you see,
mm-hmm.
and then the spindles in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly made with maple. He did very beautiful maple work.
Was most of your furniture maple in the house?
Well, as I recall, I'd say it was.
Uh-huh. What was your dining room table like?
Well, it was a table that was oval.
Uh-huh.
Quite a big one, and it had a, in the center, half of it now would extend and was large enough, while we didn't have a big family, it would extend so you would probably put 12 people around the table.
Did it extend by fitting leaves into the center
of it? Yes, and the center of it was separated, and then you could take and do something in the under part of the table and pull it apart. And then if you had more guests, he'd have leaves. I can remember there were leaves probably nearly 10 inches or 12, I would say, long.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Uh-huh.
I remember that. Of course, everything that he made was made. There was never any cracks or anything like that. It was beautifully finished and always well polished and all. He finished his work beautifully. The people there in town used to say, you know, where you should go is down to New York. You could make a fortune with the kind of woodwork that you do.
He didn't want to go to New York?
No, oh no. He was a country man. He had come from Waitsfield, and he didn't want to go into a city. And after he got to be undertaker, of course, he had the business of two things to do. And I remember a thing he made in those days. Of course, today, anybody dies, and there the casket is put in what they call a hearse.
Yes.
Well, my grandfather made his hearse. And he had, I don't remember what the first one was, but when he made his new one, and he had plate glass windows on the side, like this, you see, which was beautifully made inside, and then I suppose it was probably stained, I wouldn't remember that. And because as a little girl, my grandfather at that time had gotten old, and he wasn't what you'd call a portly man, but it wasn't easy for him to climb up, so when it was time for there was a funeral, he used to come and get me, call me, and I had to climb in the hearse with a cloth and dust it out inside. Huh. And I remember how my playmates thought that was terrible, because anybody that had anything to do with a hearse, that was death, you see. And of course they were afraid of it, but I wasn't afraid of it, because I'd done that. But I do remember those little things that...
Do you remember any superstitions they had about death?
No, I don't think I do. I don't think it in my family it was, because I think if there was anything that my grandmother would have talked and explained it to me, because she was very wonderful about explaining anything that a child would be afraid of. And at that time, now today, when they do embalming, as you probably know, that is done with the... I think they make an incision under the arm to this vein or something, and the fluid is pumped some way or other
into the body.
I think that's it. Well, in those days, I can remember going, if anybody died, and my grandfather always had a big bottle of embalming fluid, and that was sent to the people who were alive, and they took a cloth, and nice clean cloth, and wet it with this embalming fluid, and just laid on their faces, you know, so their faces wouldn't discolor. Of course, they weren't kept as they do today. And that, I can remember, I didn't like that idea. But that's the only unpleasant thing I do remember about that.
How were the bodies laid out?
Always well dressed, if that's what you mean.
Were they put on two chairs, or was there something else?
No, my grandfather had a, well, I guess we just call it a board, but that was on, I don't know what held it. And it looked like a couch, you see, and it was always done nicely, pardon me, and the casket was beautifully lined. They had cloth that had been in some kind of a stamp machine, so maybe it would be flowers or things, you know.
Yes.
And that was, I can remember how I used to love to go down to his paint shop and see because it was beautifully done. And then when the casket, when they were, the person was laid out, the casket that was all lined around the casket with, I suppose, batten or something like that, so that it was like a bed and so soft. They looked like they were lying on a bed. Uh-huh. Quite different from today.
Did the side of the casket open up?
Oh, yes.
So that they could, it was not open from the top as it was today, it was open from the side.
No, I think his were open from the top.
Uh-huh.
And that top came down, of course, when that was put down and closed, and as I recall it, it seemed to me they must have been something that top was sealed so it stayed on.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't afraid of it like some of my playmates were, you know.
What were the caskets made out of?
Well, if they were wood and beautifully lined, and I think probably they'd been made of maple, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Could you remember the handles?
Yes, they had beautiful handles on. He used to buy the handles and the name plates that you would have on the top of the casket. The name would be engraved, and that would be done by an engraver in town.
Uh-huh.
That is the name and the date of their age and so forth. And the caskets at that time were just all wood. And then later, I can remember, they were made of course, it would be a wood foundation, but it was covered with cloth. Sometimes it was mahogany wood, and sometimes it was, if it was an old person, it was quite apt to be black. And that, I don't know how that was put on, but he made very beautiful caskets because there was no place in town where you could buy. We didn't have a place where they made, a shop where these were made. He made them in his own shop. And people that were poor and couldn't afford a casket, he would make them, and they were shaped, they were wider up at the top, you know,
yeah.
The length of the